This is the start of the July 16th, 1986 interview with retired fisherman Eddie Baker of Mayport, Florida. The interview is conducted at Mr. Baker's home in Mayport by David Taylor. This interview is done in connection with the Maritime Heritage Survey Project.
And from the older head of people, from what I can learn, and like y'all coming Mayport now, we coming Mayport now, all that's new. When he was coming Mayport before, we used to go this way, go around by the lighthouse.
Oh, yeah, that used to be the main road coming around.
Yeah, the main road, go out this way, go out this way and go around.
Oh, yeah. Now, did you grow up here, Captain Baker?
Yeah, I grew up here. I was about 19 years old when I come in.
Where were you born?
I was born in Ridgeville, Georgia.
And what was the name of the town?
Ridgeville, Georgia.
Ridgeville.
Mm-hmm. That's McAdams County, in McAdams County.
What else is near there? I don't know that country.
You don't?
No.
Yeah, you know Darien, Georgia?
Darien, Georgia? Is
yeah. Okay. Well, that's our hometown.
Yeah.
A little city for you know, 5 or 6 stores. And about 4 miles out in the country place where I came from, mm-hmm. in Darien. You know, they call it the Ridge, a little country place just like this Mayport, East Mayport.
Oh, yeah.
And then you can see that's over there, they call that the Ridge. Another little place, Valona. Got another little place was the Cedar Point. See, when all them was waterfront.
It's all on the water?
Yeah, it's all on the waterfront.
On the ocean, you mean?
Well, not the ocean, but the river.
Oh, yeah.
See, down here in the state of Florida, we have beaches. But up there in Georgia, you don't have no beaches. The only beaches you have there is around Tybee.
Yeah.
And you get to Tybee, then they bought the Bella Line, a road over on Jekyll Island from Tybee. And then you get over in Jekyll Island, and you have a beach over there.
Mm-hmm. Did you have many in your family? Did you have many brothers and sisters?
Yeah, my mother was a mother of 14 head of children.
14?
Yeah.
How did you fit in there?
I'm the baby boy.
The youngest of all, yeah. When were you born?
1911.
And what's your birthday?
My birthday just went by the other day, the 11th day of July. I called me to I'd be 75. I was 75 years old. I was born in 1911, the 11th day of July.
Mm-hmm.
That was my birthday.
Well, happy birthday, even though
that's right.
Yeah,
that's great. But I woke up, I said, friends that called me, and I wasn't home, and then I come home, I call them, say, happy birthday. I said, thank you. Thank you. Happy birthday. And then I'm proud of it.
Yeah.
I think back to all my people. When my father was living, I didn't know mother care, but I know father care. Because it seemed my mother died when I was pretty young. Mm-hmm. But I know father care because he raised me.
What kind of work did your dad do?
My dad was a farmer.
Yeah.
We had an 8-horse farm. And we used to plant corn, peas, watermelon, benny, and... Well, in them days, we didn't plant too much, we didn't mess with too much tobacco and stuff and cotton because boll weevil was bad mm-hmm. up there in that part of the country. Mm-hmm. So we plant peanuts and sweet potatoes and cane and stuff like that. And later on, he got on his feet and he had a cane mill, mm-hmm. 2 60-gallon pots, 2 16-ounce rollers. Mm-hmm. And my brother, the second oldest brother, that he'd leave and went north and he wake. And Willie went north and he wake and they all come back and they helped him. Mm-hmm. And they said we used to have a mule pulling the mill. Mm-hmm. And they bought him a Ford, Model T Ford engine. And they put that up on there and put the clogs on it. Mm-hmm. And then that's where we used to grind the syrup, get rid of the mule.
Did you figure when you were a young fellow that you were going to be a farmer like your dad, too?
No, I never did figure. I didn't like farming.
Yeah.
Because I used to get whipping all the time about farming. Mm-hmm. See, I didn't know no better. My father believed, he thought that I should know better, but I didn't. Because instead of me pulling the grass, I pulled the potato. And he whipped me and make me stick it back, and then I had to tote water to water it, where he catch roots. See? And by that, I didn't like farm. I didn't like to be on the farm. And that's what caused my father to get hurt. They plant, and then they ship their crop. At the end of the year, just before Christmas, they get returned. See, and they send them a big check or whatever they make, and then they go and pay for the fertilizer and all. And next season when time to plant, but we have our seed and he had the fertilizer, he just turned the ground over and we go ahead and replant. Mm-hmm. We plant corn, watermelon, and we plant lots of vegetable stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But see, I grew up on the farm. My wife get at me now, so I don't eat enough vegetable, but see, I grew up with all that stuff and I don't care too much about it.
Yeah.
Now, my biggest meal right now is fish.
Yeah.
See, I'm crazy about fish. I can eat fish 3 times a day. Don't worry about me. So long as
fish. When did you first see the ocean?
Well, I come here in Mayport. It was 27. I come here on a little old small boat, and they used to pull pollens. And a man gave me a job on there, the captain. It was Captain. I'm trying to think his last name now, because his name is, was in Deering, that's where he came from. Mm-hmm. And he had a little old boat, had a 16-horse Vulcan. And he used to pull the pollen fast enough to keep it straight. And when the tide turned, then anchor the boat until the tide get weak, and start up again. Take us a week to come from Ottawa Hall River here in St. John.
These were pilings to be used for wharves and things?
Well, yeah, they used to, down here, what I'm telling you about, where the train used to come here. Mm-hmm. They used to, across that river, there used to be a sailing vessel, anchor. Mm-hmm. And they comes, bring them over to the dock, and takes the coal out and put in on the cars. And then when the vessel get empty, they have the pollen, pull the pollen in the bow of it, mm-hmm. and then they cock it all the way around with oakum. Mm-hmm. And then that sailing vessel will go back wherever it's going, where it come from, all that. I didn't have sense enough to know what part of the ocean. I know it goes in the ocean, they go back some. I don't know if it's the England or where they were bringing the stuff from. Mm-hmm. But wherever they were bringing the coal from, to bring the coal in there, and then they kept pollen back.
Now, where would you get the pilings to put on the sailing vessel?
They get the pollen from Ottawa Hall River. The people cuts it, mm-hmm. and then they roll it overboard, and they take and puts it all together, and they tie it together with small pilings, limbs, we call it. Mm-hmm. They spike it together with dogs. They call a dog. They run the rope through it and tie it together and draw it tight, and the boat pull it. Well, my job, I used to get 75 cents a day. And I used to clean the lantern shade.
The what?
Lantern shade, yeah.
Where would they be?
They put them on the tail end of the light, the logs you're pulling.
Oh, yeah.
To keep anything from coming from running into it. Mm-hmm. See, when you're going in the river in the nighttime, they put them lights on it. See, and we pulls that.
This is where the big logging trucks are.
Now, see, the logging trucks, they're on the road now. But they hauls it. See, they got something to pick it up there. But them days, we used to have everything we used to move, we moved by water. Mm-hmm. In them days. When I grew up, and I remember, because that's where I figured I know that I got making money. When I make my money and I go back home, I take it to my father because I know he needs it. Mm-hmm. See, and I didn't get too much of schooling because I had to quit school to take and send my baby sister, where she can get her schooling. And which she did. She had treated me nice. I I don't regret any of the other, but they all gone, leave me. I'm the last one. And every morning I get up, I say, thank you, Jesus. I'm the last one. My family is the biggest. Now, I got brothers with children. And my oldest brother, his children, still on my property in Georgia. They helped me. I paid the tax. When I was young and growing up, I paid the tax. My brother, he wasn't fortunate like my father was to buy as much property. But then I let them stay on my property. And then I give one of the niece, I give one of them a piece of land to build a home. And I give the other one a piece of land to build a home. Well, my second oldest sister, she give my brother, second oldest son, her property. Because she went down south and married. She's down there with her husband. And that's the way my land kept up like it is today. Because I told him, I do this for y'all to live together and be one happy family. So when I go back home, I have some place to go.
That's real nice.
And when I met this lady that I married him, well, she always asked me, Eddie, you have any people? I told her, yeah. I said, I have people. I said, I have my father living. I said, but my mother died when I was young. And so she kept on and said, well, I'd like to see your father. So I used to fool her, try to fool her anyway. I said, girl, where I come from, I said, when you go there, you can go there in the evening, 5 o'clock in the evening, you go down there. I said, you have to light the lamp. And I said, because it'd be dark. You can't see. I do that because she wouldn't worry, but she kept on. And she had one little girl, old daughter now. She was about that high, a little old baby. And so I was waking. And I said, you really want to go? She said, yeah. So I told her to write. I said, you write Ridgeville, Georgia, Lawrence Baker. And my father, he'll answer. And I didn't believe she was going to write. So I went on fishing, went to wait. And one evening I come home, she told me, she said, Eddie. I said, what? She said, I got something. If you guess what it is, I'll give it to you. So I was crazy about macaroni, see?
Yeah.
So I told her, I said, oh, you're going to cook a pound of macaroni. She said, that's all you think of what you got. Just like that. So I laughed. I said, yeah. So I didn't have the first thought of it was no letter. I didn't figure the old man, she wrote him, no way. So after a while, she reached on the pillow and she got the letter. And I look at it. I said, that's a standard bell writing. I know the lady handwriting. And so she took and opened the letter and she read it. Said, I didn't know where that boy was. So I thought he was dead. Well, I stray off, come down and start on boats, and I didn't write home. See? And I love her because it wasn't for her, I might probably never would have went back home right now then. She keep on writing him, keep up with him, send money. I was making good money, she sent him money. So he wrote and told her, say, darling, say, I don't know who daughter you is, but God always bless you. Because I didn't know where that boy was. So she keep on saying, I want to go see him. I said, oh, Alan, we'll go one day. Yeah, when it be too late. Well, she always tell me about him. And I thinks about him, so I said, okay. So one day, the same man I was fishing for then, man of Jesus, this doctor right down the street, yeah, and he told me, I told him, Captain, I ain't been home in about 20 years. I said, rather bad, I'm going to see my father. He said, your father ain't no fun right there? Said, yeah. So we put the boat on the railway. So they put the boat on the railway. Me and her got the little girl, and we left. So that evening, before we get to Brunswick, fella had a car, and he cast far as Brunswick and got us to the bus station. And we got there just in time to catch the bus and go to the ridge and go to deer. So we ran in and got a ticket and got on the bus. We got over there, it was dark. And the only thing she said to me, she said, Eddie, you know, you ain't been in a long time. And it was dark, see, wasn't no lights, no city light or nothing like that. And she said, do you know where you're going? I said, yeah, I know where I'm going. If I close my eyes, I can go, I know where I'm going. By the turn of the road, just like that. So I got the little girl, the daughter and mom, and she catched me across the arm. We went on down the street, down the road. I said, see this road, Joe? She said, yeah. I said, the same road, Joe, take me. God to be my father, say. That's what I told her. So I went on, we got to the house. She said, how far you got to go? I said, ain't got far, no, ain't far. So I went, I said, right here, to this house. I see that light? Yeah, we went there. I knocked, and his wife come to the door, and I said, Professor home? And she said, yes. And he caught my voice. And he said, that's Lawrence Baker, baby boy. So I got to get up and came home. And he jumped up, slipped on his pants over his pajamas and come out in the car, and I introduced my wife to him. And I introduced my wife to his wife. And he said, you got a nice kid. I said, thank you. He said, yeah, you Lawrence Shaw. You look just like your daddy. I said, thank you, ma'am. So he got in his car and he took us out there. It took us about 15 minutes. We went out there. My daddy told him, my sister said, that's my son coming. She said, y'all need to come now. So I said, because he ain't never tell me a lie. Well, I didn't lie to my old folks. I never did. So we went on, and then he stopped and put us out. He said, well, I'm going, Lawrence. I'll see you tomorrow. Let you and your son get together. You ain't seen one another for a long time. So when I went in the house, we walked in there, and I never forget it. They had a big pot of snap beans cooked, rice, biscuit. We sit down and eat. And I was telling him, you know, about part of my life, and I met her, and how good she was to me. And he told her like this. I said, you know one thing? Say, did that devil fight you? And she said, no. I said, oh, you ain't going to tell me. She said, but I believe it. I know him. He likes to fight. Yeah. He on. So I let them sit up there and talk. I went to bed. The next morning when I wake up, he had my little girl out there under the tree looking at the squirrel. He was showing him the chicken. And he had about 500 head of chicken, you know. And we pick up about 8-10 dozen eggs every day. You know, and he used to sell his egg to the city market. See, they have big crates come there and hold 24 dozen in a crate, and they picks it up on a Thursday, and we, a white leg on his head, and he saved the money and buy a chicken feed to feed yourself. And we stayed out, I think I stayed out there within two days, I think. Told him I'd go back, going away. And he said, don't make it so long. I said, no, I wouldn't. So the next time I went back, me and her, we went back a little bit early. We wrote, I went on back. We spent a while with him, you know. So I told her like this. I said, girl, I said, what? She said, what? I said, let me tell you one thing. I said, you know one thing? I said, I ain't never tell my daddy a lie. And I told him, use my word, and you don't marry me. Then the word I told her, she didn't say, she just smiled. And then we get back in Jackson, we went to the courthouse and we got married. And we've been married ever since. And I told her, my sister, David's sister, come down here when I was sick. And she tell me, she said, Eddie, she said, she young. And you know about going traveling around. Say, be nice to her. Say, don't be mean to her. I wasn't mean to her. If she was nice to me, I was nice to her. And I told her, I said, Alice, for two people to get along together. I said, you have to trust me, and I trust you. I love you, and you love me. But I didn't tell about God, but first, I was learned that at home. Your first love is Jesus. And then Jesus, you love Jesus, and Jesus loves you. And your wife is your second love. And every morning I get up. Sometimes I go to the bathroom. When I come back, I say my Our Father prayer. I say, thank you, Jesus. I look out that window over there, and I see that sun come. I say, thank you for your darling son coming this morning. And if the younger generation of people would take more history of the Bible, it'll be a better days than we got now. Because I used to go to church, and I used to go to Sunday school, and they used to tell us about the Bible. Mm-hmm. That everything is in the Bible to come to a pass. You be honor your father, as your mother and your father, your dad, you belong upon this land, for thy God give it thee. Mm-hmm. And that's why I would never tell my father a tale. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't tell him a tale. And I stayed here, stayed on Mayport, up in the quarters.
Now, where is that from here now?
That's right up there in the quarters, right up there. Yeah.
East of where we are right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, it's about east of south out, but north of where he is. And we was renting, she was, and I was staying with her. And I'll wake and I give her more money.
Well, what job did you have after you had this job with the pilings?
Well, I quit with the piling. See, I wake on that pilot on that. I went back to Brunswick. We'll come down here and bring a load of piling. But we didn't get paid till I go back. We go back to Georgia. Mm-hmm. Well, it take us a week to come to pull him down here, but it didn't take us about seven, eight days to come. It take us about 4 days to come back, because we bucks the tie. We don't be pulling the load.
Right.
See, but when we come, we had a string of pollen. Well, they call them raft. That would be if we pull them, and it take us a time. He had the power to pull the buck the tide, mm-hmm. See. So, and he gave me 75 cents a day, and well, I saved that. But along that time, it was a lot of money to me. So when I go home, I didn't know where to throw it, to spend it, and throw it away. I carried on, give it to my father. And then when I leave, and come back down here, I come back down here on a shrimp boat.
On a shrimp boat, yeah. Someone from Brunswick.
From Brunswick, Georgia.
Yeah.
I come on a swamp boat. And when we come in here, I know it wasn't no dock to tie to, because I done been on the waterfront. Mm-hmm. And we go in that basin and anchor.
That's over where the Navy base is?
That's right where the Navy base is right now. We anchor in there, and then we ice our swamp. Mm-hmm. And we swamp that side like that, small, the cannon. Them days, you came to the cannon factory, and the people peel them. And then they used to can them in can, and they had can them in jars. And we stayed on here about 2 or 3 days. We have about 80 or 90 bushel. Sometimes 100 bushel, we go home.
Now, was that the first time you'd ever been fishing on a shrimp boat?
Yeah.
What was that like? How did you learn about what to do?
Well, I was a friend of mine. He was my father, and he told my father he was going to give me a job and take me on the boat. And I went on the boat with him, and he learned me how to fish. And I fished, I liked it. But later on, I learned to find out that he didn't give me the money he promised to give me. Mm-hmm. So I quit him, went with somebody else, make more money.
What kind of boats and gear did people use then?
Net.
What kind of net?
Well, they made out of linen twine, out of cotton twine. Mm-hmm. But now they got nets now, same kind of nets, but they made out of nycot. Lighter twine, and it dips it with green, dip the webbing with green dip. Mm-hmm. In them days, you used to tar the webbing with black tar.
Oh, yeah.
See, it was black. Mm-hmm. And it lasts longer. See, but and, they claim when they dip the tar the net with black tar, it seasons the twine and it lasts longer. And then the fishermen, they got smart, they say, yeah, the sharks. I see the white fish in the dark net, and then somebody come up with a different dip, and they start dipping it green. Mm-hmm. Some of them the blue. And then sometimes, some of the nets, we just make them and use them white, but they don't last as long.
Yeah.
And a long time ago, when they first started, we used to take and use a chain, not chain, but lead on the net, on the lead line, and cocks on the top.
Yeah.
See, and then things going to make bigger boat, faster boat. You can live on the boat just like you do home. Mm-hmm. We had a little burner stove, one burner stove, cook one pot at a time, cook your rice, set that off, fry your fish, set that off, then you make your coffee and you have your meal. And I stayed on that boat and fished around until when we used to come to the hill, on the hill, we got a fella down there to bring us, and we found out it was a stove. And we walked around the water edge and come to the stove. Sometimes we run out of sugar, sometimes we run out of milk, or run out of thing that we go to the store and get what we need. And we get back, he casts back at the boat, we give him a dollar, sometimes a dollar and a half, and give him a mess of swim. And we go back to the boat. And the next trip we go in, catch something. Next time we come back, we bring a little bit more grocery. And when the first doctor found here in Maple, when I come here, it was Manuel Jesus. It was a boat that my wife's mother knowed about it. She's dead and gone. And the people here used to catch their fish. And they catch the Hesse. And the Hesse go up this river, go to Jacksonville.
Hesse?
That's what we call it. That's what they call it.
Type of a fish?
Everybody put the fish on there and go to Foothill Ocean Street. It was a great big market. And they unload the fish over there to Foothill Ocean Street, and that's where they pack them. And that's where they ship them north, New York, all parts of the world. Mm-hmm. And people used to fish them. They used to fish with a pole. And they used to catch trout. Speckled trout, that long, young bass, and all that. But see, all that kind of wake play out now. The people got nets. Everything they do now with nets. It's like the king mackerel. Now he's coming on for the tournament to come on with the king mackerel. Now everybody breaking down for get the big fish. They're going out there now and see what part of the ocean they're fishing, the depths of water, how far they go offshore. See, to catch the biggest fish, to feed where they catch the largest fish, where they can win the tournament. See, but they think the biggest fish is, to my idea, the biggest fish is close in shore.
Why is that?
Well, because they don't have to fish hard. They have to swim hard to catch the food.
Yeah.
They don't have to fish hard to run a little minnow down.
Right.
But out in the deep water, the deeper the water is, the harder he got to wait to get his food.
That's true.
And that's what they go. They goes out there. And I used to sell chum to the boats when it goes out there. Once he used to get us a dollar sack, then he went up and gets a couple of dollars, and he used to get $5 a sack for chum. Well, I had plenty of ice. I used to fish for Mr. Beasley down there, and his son is in the tournament. I know what I do. I taken care of plenty of ice. And I put the fish in the bag and put a couple of shovels full of ice in there. Keep it cool so when they go out there and they dump the fish out in the boat, it wouldn't be rotten. And by that way, I used to have a lot of custom. Well, Mr. Junior, he was nice to me and his son, and he know a lot of fellas, and I had everybody coming looking for the Miss Alice. And he bought a boat and he said, "Eddie, I'm going to buy a boat and I'm going to name it after your wife." And which he did. And it's down there now, the Miss Alice. My wife named Miss Alice. He named the boat Miss Alice.
That's pretty nice. Yeah. I've just got to turn the tape over here. You were telling me about nets a minute ago. Did these boats tow just one net or a couple?
One net.
What shape of net would that be?
Well, that'd be a net about 50 foot.
That's across the mouth of the
net? Yeah, about 50 foot with small net, them days. And then they got bigger boat with more power. See, them days we only had 22 horsepower.
For the engine?
Yeah.
Whew.
That's all you had, 22 horsepower. And then later on, Charlie Fisher, he was the first man that had a fleet of boats in Maple. And he had 36s, Lathrop. And we had 60-foot nets, 7-foot doors. And Mr. Charlie always liked to catch big swim. He didn't like little swim. And he had a little place down here. He used to take his swim and peel them. And when he peel them, he cans them. And then he ship them north. And the shrimping business, done grow from boiling some, pickling some. One time we used to pick them in barrel and ship them north. Then they start canning them. Then they come from that now, they start shipping them now. What they do with them now, they grade them and ship them now, big some. See, they got a grading machine. They have three different kinds of shrimp. See, they had 26 theta, they had 31-35, they had 36-40, they had 46-50. See? And then when the shrimp get down to 60-70, then the government step in. Say it's too small. Mm-hmm. You have to have smaller shrimp, bigger shrimp.
Did you have to have any kind of license to fish when you began, when you started?
Yeah. Our license cost about $2.
Oh, yeah.
Them did. Now they cost $10.
Yeah.
Now they take the dealers, when you go fish for a man now, and he give you a boat, and he give you a boat, he give you the papers, you have the papers on the boat, you the captain, you got two fellas extra, he pays the license bill. He paid that money for your license. And on the boat, on the paper, when the man come aboard and check the boat, he checked each one of the man's names, three of us, on the boat. Mm-hmm. And in the boat, up in the wheelhouse a long time ago, he just had a piece of paper. But now they got it cut in the boat, three merchant seamen. So you have to have that in there. See? And when you got that in there, then they had a place used to go to the hospital. All that come up. We goes to the hospital and you get didn't cost nothing. The company pays for that. Well, that is run on and run on until when rigging come, he cut that out. So if I go to the doctor now, I have to pay for it.
Yeah, right.
I went to the doctor yesterday and that was $38. But I was tickled to death when I got to the doctor's office and the nurse told me, said, Eddie, said, yeah, got a credit wake up for you. From that, that's from the Social Security credit.
Yeah.
All over that. Now, I didn't have to pay but $4 yesterday.
Oh, that's all right.
See? Yeah. Like that helped me. Because on the way up there, I had a blowout. And I was just telling my wife this now. I wanted to find out the we got the tire we got about 2 months or 3 months ago. Excuse me. That did she had the paper? And then she started, you ought to keep that. You ought to keep that. And then she said, I saw a car coming in. Yeah, I said, yeah, that's the people who were supposed to come up here. Yeah. He had to want to know about history. I said, yeah, that's them. Now, about that's the history. Now, about this place and the young, I was one of the youngest, the oldest fishermen is in Mayport. I can go down there by Mr. Raymond Singlin, he can tell you I fished for him for a number of years. And I fished for Mr. Beasley, lately I fished for him.
What's his last name?
Mr. Beasley.
Mr. Beasley?
Junior Beasley, yeah. And these older fellas that I fish for Mac Rowland, father. Not Mac, but his father.
Yeah.
Me and my wife, oldest brother, we used to fish for Mr. Rowland. And then after I quit working for Mr. Rowland, I went to work for Mangies. I fished for Mangies.
When you fish for these men, did that mean that they owned the boat, or did you have...
Yeah, they owned the boat. They owned the boat. They had a fleet of boats.
Yeah.
They had a fleet of boats. Because I remember in 1940, Captain Manuel told Mr. Rowland, he said, you better get some colored fellows on them boats. And he talked Portuguese, and he said, Eddie, I said, yeah. He said, well, I tell him that because after a while, a war break out, that them fellows he got on, they ain't going to be able to carry his boat out. But I'll be fishing because y'all born and raised over here in this country. So I didn't ever think it was gonna happen. So sure enough, one day a man come down in to the dock, took us all in the fish house, closed the door, and he sat down and he talked to us. He told us what's gonna happen, and he said, if you don't want this to happen in this country, He told us about submarine, which I know seen. And then he told us about different strange boat. He told us about the big ball. What part of the country that come from? A Russian. Mm-hmm. Told us about everything. But we supposed to keep that as a secret. Mm-hmm. We didn't tell anybody. And then we had a, when we used to carry later on the next season, they come and they start drafting people for the service. And I'm going to tell you that it was hell then.
Yeah.
Because everybody figure, if you got a fleet of boats, 10, 12 boats, and you got a fleet of men, and he going up there to Uncle Sam and have, he going to stand for you. Well, it's just like you in prison somewhere. Mm-hmm. You got to fish, you got to work for him. See? And just like I told my wife, I said, I don't want that to happen. So he said, well, what you going to do? I said, well, I just come out the hospital about 3-4 years ago, so the doctor told me whenever if I got to go to the Army, to call him. Mm-hmm. So we leave, and I think we come to, we leave in 42. We leave, yeah. And went to Camp Lana. I mean, it was, I count 7 bus loaded. And when we got there, go in there, and they got someone to tell you. Say, all right, so we're going to call you by your name. And we want you to take everything off, mm-hmm. put it on this belt, and that's gone. And you be buck naked when you come in the world. Mm-hmm. And any scar, anything on you, they see it, and your face will start from the eye doctor, from the nose doctor, and on, mm-hmm. kept on going, kept on. And when you get to the other end of the hall, if you pass, they put a tag on you, 1A. So everybody I see come by me had 1A. So I had 1A. So when them boys get the ticket, get the clothes to go back home, I didn't. So they wants to know what all the scar was on me, mm-hmm. where it come from, and who done it. So I told him, I said, the doctor that done it was Dr. Johnson. It done happened in Marine Hospital. That was in Savannah, Georgia. And he said, you know how to call him? I said, yeah, I know the hospital. So I called on York Street. And he said, Dr. Johnson wouldn't be until this afternoon. And I told him to tell him to call Camp Blanton. And this is Eddie Baker. These doctors want to talk to him. And now look, everybody, all my crew, where I come, they done gone. Mm-hmm. My wife said, when she looked, she said, everybody said, where's Eddie? He ain't Camp Blanton. And then she was worried. But he ain't coming home. And all of them had the tag on them.
Yeah.
They had 90 days to be home. After that, they'd be going to the camp. Mm-hmm. So that night, that evening, about 7 o'clock, they called me. And I went to the phone and said, hey, what the hell are you doing in there? I said, well, they got me on. I want to call 1A. He said, oh, hell, you ain't got, they don't need you in the Army. What the hell are they going to do with you? You can't do what they want you to do. I said, well, they don't take my word. So I said, use the man. Just like that. So I can give the doctor. And he was talking. And he said, okay, Captain. He said, but you still keep that 1A. You still in 1A. You're in good condition. Mm. And if we call you, would you willing? I told him, yeah. I didn't say no. So that night when they got me in Jacksonville, I had a sister. She passed not long ago. Mm-hmm. And I went to her house and stayed. So I called and told my wife. I said, yeah, I'm coming home. I'll be home in the morning. I said, but I'm going to stay at the sister's house tonight. I said, because I didn't get back from out there till 9:30. And there was a fellow up there, had a pretty building up there now. And I called his place, and I could hear over the phone calling, Alice, you got a phone call. And she come running and come on down and told her who I talked to. And I told her, she said, well, you be home in the morning? I said, yeah, I'll be home in the morning. But see, when I come home, I had a card 1A, but I didn't have to go with them fellas. So when I went to the dock, Captain Mann said to me, "See, you lucky." I said, "Yeah." And then sometimes they get mad. I said, "You smart. You figure." I said, "No, Cap." I said, "No such thing. There's no smart." I said, "But we all in this country, in Warbrill, we have to go." I said, "But the doctor told me that." But I told him, "Man, if that happened, I wouldn't know nothing about it." Mm-hmm. So I went on back fishing. And all his boys, what he had, some of them he stand for them, some of them he took them. Took them anyhow. Mm-hmm. Took all but the captain. Mm-hmm. He kept the captain, but because he could get other strikers. Mm-hmm. So I fished with him. I fished with Captain Mangum for, I think it was, if I can remember, 27 years.
Matt Rowland's father was named Manuel?
No, Matt Rowland's father was named Mr. Rowland.
Uh-huh.
And his son named, Little Rowland. But old man Rowland was a tall, slender fellow.
And he grew up in Portugal, you think?
Yeah, grew up in Portugal. And come, his first boat he brought, when he came up, he bought a boat. He named it Pedro Vidro. That was the name of it. With a 40 later event.
Were there other people that grew up in other countries living in Mayport when you first came?
No, only the people I know was living in Mayport then was, well, it's a Dutchman.
A Dutchman?
A Dutchman.
Yeah, who was that?
They come from Sweden.
Yeah?
That's where a Dutchman come from. And then another nationality of people was Italian. Mm-hmm. They come from Italy.
Do you remember any of their last names?
No, not in them days I didn't. I didn't pay no attention. All I know, they were there's foreigners, you know.
Yeah.
By the language they talk. And they'll talk to us, and we'd be over there fishing, and they won't swim for fish. They'll come in, ask us to get them a mess, mm-hmm. and they give us a piece of money. Mm-hmm. It didn't make no difference. Yeah. But the Morris are the biggest fishermen, and the history of the fisherman life was Portuguese. Mm. That's where all the fishermen. The Portuguese, the best fishermen now going is Portuguese. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're fishermen. Ain't like, you see, now them days we didn't know anything about the pogie, because pogie was a pogie plant, yeah. It was two pogie plants.
Here in Mayport?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, the first one was the independent pogie plant, and the next one was Charles S. Wallace. Mm-hmm. Well, they had five or six boats. And then I quit waking on the swamp boat and wake to the pogie plant because it wasn't catching no swim. Mm-hmm. It's like the seas now, they ain't catching much swim. Everybody going off, should not look for rocks on.
Yeah.
And so I went down and I waking the plant down there, my same wife right there. Mm-hmm. And we were getting 10 cents an hour.
Mm. What work did you do in the pogie plant?
I used to bale fish.
Yeah.
Bale fish. Yeah. And when we get through baling the fish out the boat, we come up there and we wake in the shed just to make them hours, mm-hmm. to make them time, to make the money.
What did they do with the pogies that they processed in the plant?
You process the boat pogies. You got a big tank. You put all the fish in there, and you got a cooker. You go in the cooker, and the real hot steam water goes over the raw fish, and the oil wash all the oil out. When they squeeze it, it squeezes it dry, mm-hmm. and all the oil will come out and go in a tank. And then that water runs in that tank, and the all the oil stay on the top, mm-hmm. and the water to the bottom, water go out, and the oil put it in another tank. And all this chum, we call it the chum, mm-hmm. all that fish go in a big shed, mm-hmm. and it dries it. Mm-hmm. They dry it to make fertilizer out of it. They dry it to make chicken feed out of it. They dry that stuff, and they take and make meal. Mm-hmm. You know, people go there and say they get fish meal. Mm-hmm. And then you can go down to the river and get the soft mud, and take that fish meal and mix a big ball and put a string in the middle of it and throw it overboard with a float on it and take a 5-foot, 6-foot cast net and cast around and catch swim.
Oh, yeah. Did that ball of mud and chum have a special name? What'd you call that?
That's how we call it. We call it a mud ball. We call it a mud roll. You know, just mix it all.
Yeah.
And when you throw it overboard, there's some, I guess, get the smelling of that fish mm-hmm. in there, and they feed on it. Just feed on it. And you take a cast, you catch 2 quarts, sometimes 3 quarts. a sump of cats.
Do people still do that?
No, they got against the law. They don't.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they don't allow them to do that now.
Yeah.
Because why? Because, see, long time ago in Nicaragua, that's where all the people, the poor people, were making a living,
mm-hmm.
in the river.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they got some of the people making some of the money, everything going up, swamp, fish, going up like that. They start making different laws. You have to have a license to fish. You got to have a license for your boat. You got to have a license for your nets. You got to have a certain size mesh net and all that in the boat, the fish. And it wasn't nobody can get that for you but a dealer.
Mm-hmm.
See? Now you take Mr. Adam. He had a hotel on the Atlantic Beach, and he had a big building wharf there in Jacksonville. He used to pull the boats up on the railway. Then he had a room over there on the side. He used to buy all these different kind of nets. And you go there and you get the kind of nets you want, and they measure it and have it fixed, have it hang, according to how you fix it if you don't want to hang it yourself. And then they charge it to the company.
Mm-hmm.
See, then when you catch the fish, they take out what they owe you, and then they take out his, he get out his money, and he send it back to his linen company.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we used to get the money from, the person that you fish for, because you wasn't able to buy it.
Right.
See, they gets it for us, just like the shad nets. Now, when the season goes, some people save the shad net, mm-hmm. and some fellas don't give a damn about it.
Yeah.
They let it go out there and bury up in the sand and rotten.
Mm-hmm.
Then when somebody comes, next year, they come down to go back to the company.
Mm-hmm.
When we get so-and-so, and then they buy some more nets.
Mm-hmm.
Now, last year, they didn't have no shad season at all. Don't know what happened to the shad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the same way with the shrimp. But I always known, I've been around Maple for not quite a time, if you don't get a hurricane during the hurricane season, you won't get no swamp.
Hmm.
Swamp won't come out the river.
What are other ways that you look at the weather to know where the shrimp are going to be so you know where to go?
Yeah, but see, because you take in the fall of the year, the swamp come out the river to go south. And then spring of the year, the swamp come from south, come back hunting the inlets.
Yeah.
It goes in there and goes in the river to spawn. Now you take in Florida, you have food pairs, and you have, well, the cape there, there's open that up there. But you don't have the inlets like you do the Lusramana, coming up there, Matanzas, St. Augustine, mm-hmm. Mayport, Nassau, Ferndina. All them places, the farther you go north, the more inlets you have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the people go is on the kind of catching the shrimp, because the shrimp go in the river and spawn. And when they get, the river get full of shrimp, like you say now, the river and the creeks and stuff full of small shrimp, little mm-hmm. bit of shrimp. See, but your fishes, they eat up a lot. People don't believe, but you take a ton of croakers, little croakers, eat up a million fish.
Mm-hmm.
A million is a little shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
They eat them up. And years ago, you had in Mayport, yeah, you used to have a thing come drifting down the river like a raft. That was to call lilies. It growed up in the fresh water.
Mm-hmm.
And the shrimp had something to hide. They had a root about that long
mm-hmm.
under the bottom. And the fish get after them. They get up amongst them roots. And they can't get to them.
Mm-hmm.
But now the people got younger and they got smarter, the younger generation. They had a big tank made with a blow on both sides, and they burned that stuff up, kill it, to clear the water,
mm-hmm.
to make the water more pure, clean.
Mm-hmm.
See? And the shrimp don't have nowhere to hide.
Is that hyacinths?
Them hyacinths, yeah. You don't see no hyacinths. You don't see them no more in the St. John River,
mm-hmm.
not like you used to.
Oh, yeah.
You used to be big white lilies on them,
mm-hmm.
and you can see big margosin, like, mom, we crawl up on it, and all.
Yeah.
I know we have tops of the darkness, see snakes on them. And we be throwing rocks at them. But see, that stuff come outside and get on the bottom, and the swamp have protection.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they don't have that no more. And just a few, 2 or 3 weeks, or a couple of months of the swamping is gone.
Mm-hmm.
She said that the boats have to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
You keep the further north you go, the more surf you get. Because the further north you go, the more rivers you got. Mm-hmm. You don't have that many rivers in the state of Florida.
Did the way the wind was blowing or the clouds or anything tell you anything about where to go for shrimp?
Yeah. A lot of people, when they go wind blowing from the west, we get onto the beach. And when the wind blow from the northeast or northwest, you get offshore. Because to say the fish, and the shrimp, anything in the water wakes to the wind. It wakes to the wind, even much the crab. You can tell when the weather going to change. You see a crab on top of the water, and you see him swimming offshore. You say, well, you're going to have offshore weather. Yeah. That's where the old ahead of people used to go, before they have all these instruments they got now.
Were there other things to look at that would tell you what the weather was going to do?
Oh, yeah.
Like what?
Yeah, you can take a, you, I learned this from a Norwegian fellow. You take a small bottle and you kill a shark and you take the liver and let that oil drop the sun. And then he get offshore and get some clear water and he put that water in that bottle and he put that oil in that bottle. And just before, when the weather start, you see that water get muddy, milky. And they leave. So you're getting some bad weather coming. There you go. But now they got radios, they got weather machine, something like that. When I was on a ship one time, I got on a ship in Brunswick, Georgia, and we went on a ship named Shake Shinny, a slow ship. That's when I first leave out of my daddy, nobody knew where I was, before I ever met my wife, I was small. But they knew I was out in the shining shoes, but they didn't know it. But when the ship went to France, I couldn't get off. See, they hide me.
Yeah.
They put me in a locker and tell the man, you need to come on, and the immigration people, you know, come on and check the crew. They put me in a locker. And then that night when everything gets still, they put a big coat on me, take me up the street. Came up to the restaurant, get me something to eat. I remember I said, what is long bread? Oh, that's French bread, that's French bread. I didn't know, so. But at full time, they get me back on the ship. Mm-hmm. So when they leave France, you went to Hamburg, Germany, and then the Moorish pianos I ever seen in my life. That's all they was putting on that ship, pianos. And they put them pianos on and they wrap it up with them big old blanket looking thing. And put it in the bin and they store it. And that was a 6-month ship. And when they come back, that ship come in Miami. And they had a tag on me back then. I didn't know it. They shipped me back to Brooklyn. On the train and a lady said to me, said, son, I said, yes, ma'am. They shipping you. I said, hey, what you mean shipping me? So you got a tag on your back there, you're going to Brunswick. But they gave me, I think I had about $900 on that trip.
Did you ever go on any trips like that again across the ocean?
Mm-mm, no more. I had enough of that. They showed me how to get the time of day. They had a big thing on the deck of the boat in the middle of the day and they shoot the sun. Mm-hmm. And they say it's 12 o'clock. The captain learned me that. He learned me how to run north, learned me how to run west, showed me how to go south, blocked the compass all the way around the side. I know it about the compass. Yeah, I know it about the water. And in the night, he showed me the 7 dippers, the stars, they showed it to me. And then I had he was a Norwegian fella, but he treated me real nice.
Yeah.
He showed me anything I wanted to learn, he showed it to me. Mm-hmm. He said, now if you run by the star, we run by them. You don't run by the 7 sisters. Different. You run by this. See the star? This is the only star to the western. It goes to the western. It goes this way. And then if you run so far this way, then you change. Mm-hmm. And they had a big thing on the side of the boat. They slow the ship down. They drop it, hit the bottom. They look at it. They tell what kind of bottom it is. Know where it is. Mm-hmm. But now they got all that electricity.
How old were you when you became a skipper of a shrimp boat? Yeah,
I've been about 16 years old.
Since you were about 16, you had your own boat then?
No, I never had a boat. Yeah. This man I was waiting for offered me a boat.
Yeah.
But I listened at the rest of the fellas, and that's why I don't. And that's why I don't have one today.
Yeah.
Because he told me, he said, I'm going to take this boat and go back on the West Coast. That's where I was.
Yeah.
I fished with him. We went, that was 1950. Mm-hmm. In 51, we went on the West Coast. And but I didn't have much learning, education like a lot of fellas on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
He give all of them the chart and tell me to follow them.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay. So I had a young fella that goes to the house. He, well, I'm pretty fond of him, and he is, and me too, because we, I had him on the boat with me. And when we got in Miami, we all went in out to Bad Weather. And I went to the custom house, and I got charred. I bought charts and I bought a book, go through Hawktown. But I read the book, you know, I had to blunder, but I read the book. And they tell you about the deer markers, you can't get out the channel too far. You hit the rocks, and the rocks will go through the boat and all that. So we didn't, I told them, I said, well, we ain't gonna bother with that. We gonna worry about how many lights from here, the Key West. That's where we was going, the Key West. And we got the chart out there, and it got some little knots cut on the side of the chart.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have no scale to measure it. We took a matchstick
mm-hmm.
and cut a block in it, and we measured that way, how many miles.
Mm-hmm.
And them lights was 20 miles visible. When you get a visible at this light here, and you couldn't see it, you can look behind you, and you just barely see the light. You can look in the front. You're looking to the southwest or southeast, you can see the visible air light when it come on.
Mm-hmm.
When it come on.
Mm-hmm.
And then just hold your course and go right on. And we had 13 of them lights from Miami to Key West.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the 13 light, we never passed it. And we look on the chart, and it showed us down there, west and northwest of that chart, down there, it was a light. A blinking light. That was a buoy, called a sea buoy.
Yeah.
And that was the buoy we were looking for. And when we seen that buoy, we turned and went right on down in there.
Right.
And we got on down in there, and all of his boats followed me. But they had the chart.
Yeah.
And because I didn't have none. They followed me. When we got down and we got to that sea buoy, and we look on the chart, and it says another buoy. And we watched for that buoy, and after a while we seen it, and we went right on around the channel, and we ran up on a great big buoy, and we see a ship tied to it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we come around the point, and we come right sharp around to the point and turn back northwest, I never forget it. There go, all the swamp boat was over there, was right there. And we went, and we tied beside the boats, and we tied to the fellas, and we talking. Well, how did you do that? How y'all did it? How long did it take y'all? We said, well, we had to stop one day. We stopped one day over there in Fort Lauderdale. We stopped there that night. And the next night, we stopped in Miami. The southeast was too hard. I said, then we come on, leave out. We come on. We ain't had no more trouble.
Mm-hmm.
See, we had the boat pumped down full of ice, as much ice as we could get in.
Yeah.
We had all the tanks full of fuel. We had enough fuel to cast over there and fish 4 or 5 nights. And we didn't. I believe I had the worst luck of the whole fleet because I break bend two booms. And I told him the boom was too short to make it longer. And he didn't fix it. But we had about 58, the first trip was 58 boxes or something.
Mm-hmm.
The next trip we had 60 something box. And the same thing happened. So I called Harper. He was ahead. I told him, Harper? I said, yeah. I said, I got enough of it. And so I got my suitcase packed, and then I get to the dock, I'm going, so I can get killed over there. Oh, yeah, I get killed over there. And Captain Man said.
End of tape 1. Interview continued on tape 2.